She loves regional history, and here is one of the stories she tells. She writes, Sterna's restaurant in Providence was established in 1908 by Mike Sterna. Restaurateur was his day job, but by night he wrestled some of the largest and strongest men on the East Coast. In March of 1918, Sterna took on Wiadek Zabiszko, dubbed the famous Polish wrestler of his day. During the Tuesday night match, Sterna was able to prevent Zbyszko from pinning his shoulders to the mat for the full 15 minutes. After the contest, a rematch was called, and the men were set to grapple twice in 1 week, but this time it would be for 20 minutes. Zbyszko claimed he needed the 5 extra minutes due to the fact that Sterna was too heavy for him to throw in only 15. Though there were several times when it looked like Zbyszko would pin him, the powerful Polish grappler was wrong about the extra minutes. Sterna claimed victory yet again. Sterna's next challenge came from Fred Foster, another local who had made a name for himself on the wrestling circuit. Foster's father had owned and operated a grocery store in West Scranton for many years. The Sterna-Foster match took place at the Providence Auditorium in May of 1918. The best 2 and 3 falls would take home the $400 purse, and strangleholds were barred. Foster was the victor. The Masked Mystery was one of the best wrestlers in the country, and the champion of Providence was slated to face off with him shortly after his matchup with Foster. The bout between Sterna and the well-known grappler was one of the most exciting at the theater since wrestling had been revived there some time before. The visiting wrestler tried all his moves on Sterna in an effort to throw him, but he failed each and every time. And when the match ended, Sterna was $110 richer. Mike Sterna never rose to the level of the famed wrestler Frank Gotch, but many considered him the champion of the coal region, and he had proved himself worthy of the title many times. That from a blog post by regional historian Margot Azzarelli, titled Champion of Providence, from May 2015. As it happens, we're invited to experience the story of a fictional character named Mike, Michael, from Providence, the Providence section of Scranton, a character created by Margot Azzarelli. Playwright Margot Azzarelli, with Marnie Azzarelli, original historian as well. The City of Unrest is the title of the historical drama. It depicts the infamous riot that took place in Scranton, pitting labor against capital during the Great Railroad Strike of 1877. It is the second installment of the NEPTA-nominated one act, the Bristol, and it comes with some of the same characters, such as James Finney, proprietor of the Bristol, and coal miner local hero Michael Logan, whose mission in life is fighting capitalism, with new ones as well. Playwrights Margot Azzarelli and Marnie Azzarelli, mother and daughter, and director Paige Belitsky worked together to bring the Bristol to the stage as part of an original one-act play project presented by Diva Productions. It was Paige who encouraged the playwrights to develop the story, and here is what she saw in that piece.
I love the way they write, and as a team, they write very well together. The dialogue is sharp, and it's relevant. And I kept saying to them, you have to write a full-length play, and well, here we are.
So Paige encouraged you.
Oh, definitely. I mean, we started over at the Diva with the One Act.
Yep.
How many years ago is that?
It was 2015, the first time I was in the One Act.
And I got the bug at that time to do a full-length play, but I had a short period of time to do it, so Marnie jumped in, and then we started with the Bristol.
You could be writing all kinds of stories. How is it that you're interested particularly in historical pieces?
Well, I guess I was interested in Scranton because people didn't realize how much history that we have here. And I never knew of the riots until the early 2000s, and I couldn't believe that the riots happened right on Lackawanna Avenue, a street that I've been walking on since I was a baby. and nobody knew about it. So that was my mission. It started back then to preserve the history, to bring it to the forefront, and to hopefully have people proud of Scranton, because I do get sick of hearing bad things about the city. And there's a lot to be proud of in Scranton, especially the history.
Well, what is the Bristol?
The Bristol is based on, there was a hotel establishment in Providence called the Bristol House. And it's based on the Bristol. And in doing research, I found it's a little known fact that Providence tried to break free when Scranton wanted to bring them in as a borough. And it was called the Providence Divorce Bill. And it's just very small little itsy bits of history, and that's, we kind of built it up on that.
Tell us something about bringing the first project, the Bristol, to the stage.
Well, we kind of work difficultly together, if that's the best way. Like, the product that we give is good, but when it comes to, like, working together, we butt heads a lot. So we like to keep our own separate spaces to write the original, like the rough draft stuff, and then come together and put it all together.
And Marnie, were you in the first one?
Mm-hmm. In the first one, actually, cast me as a blister sister. I was going to call it the Bristol Sisters. The blister sister. I was a rough-talking, very rough-talking biker chick.
Yeah, and all the one acts were originals also. Mm-hmm. We try to do, as you know, as much original work as we can. And that's where it all started for these
mm-hmm.
two.
That's where I started. The next one, the year after, was the Women in One Acts. And I was able to direct my own one act. So I was extremely, that was where I caught it, really. And then we both started doing stuff together.
That was the Bristol then, Paige. What did you like about that piece?
I also love history. I wasn't born and raised here, but Scranton is my adopted home. I agree with Margot. There's a lot of wonderful, beautiful things about Scranton. And who better than artists to bring that forward? So I saw the project. I loved it. I loved the characters. I loved the way they were written. I loved the history. And when I read a project, if I can see it in my mind as I'm reading it, I know I want to direct it.
Then what?
Then we decided that because the Bristol was so popular that we would do a sequel. So all I said to the girls were, it's yours. Do it. Bring it to me. Let's see what we have. And they brought me, I keep calling it City on Fire, but it's called City of Unrest.
Did you have to do much more research to carry the project along?
I'm vaguely familiar.
I was going to say, you had to do less research for this one than the first one.
Yeah, 1877 Ryans, because that's been a pet project of mine since the early 2000s. So to me, it just, because it was the same year, it all just mm-hmm. came together, and we just built on that.
Margot's being a little humble here.
Mm-hmm.
Margot is an award-winning author of historical information. She has many books out there, so believe me, she knows her stuff.
Now you have a great opportunity to tell a story you care so much about. Whom did you choose to tell this story?
Ah, well, as far as characters go, the character who appeared in the Bristol that the story revolved around is now also in City of Unrest. So we follow his journey. He worked very hard in trying to get the Providence Divorce Bill up. And, of course, it was defeated. And there's a whole series of events that happened that, you know, aren't too far from some of the political shenanigans that go on today. And so I think that was the easy part. It's always the supporting characters that you need to bring into the fold and make sure that they're relevant to the storyline, either advance it or complicate it. And, of course, my favorite is we have Ladies of the Evening, and they are my favorite. They've got the best dialogue. They're the funniest. Their costuming is amazing, and we just have a lot of fun with
mm-hmm.
it.
How did you develop those women as characters, make them come to life?
Of course, there's really no history of women in this area in the 19th century. You're hard-pressed. Well, there's a lot of history of upper-class women, to put it in a different way. There's no lower-class women. It's really hard to find anything on miners' wives. So in this play, like, we bring in a miner's wife to tell her story for the first time. And the same thing with the Painted Ladies. It's a lot of conjecture and a lot of stuff like that, but I'm basing it off of facts that I have found that I was able to dig up.
Tell us about the main character's development in this play, because we want to care about him as a person and not just for the history he puts across.
Michael, he he fights for what he believes in. He's very passionate about right and justice. And, you know, he got the divorce bill. He did get it passed, and he fought very hard for that, but he was defeated. But in the end, he did find the love of his life, and it was a happy ending in the Bristol, but not so much now. So I don't want to give too much away in City of Unrest. So he's looking for something else now to be passionate about. And when he comes back to Scranton, he finds it with the coal miners and the rioting.
Well, what actually happened that caused the riots?
Well, it started in 1873, actually, with the Depression. And the capitalists kept cutting wages of railroaders and the coal miners at the same time. So by 1877, they had had enough because they had cut their wages another 25%. So the train stopped suddenly in July of that summer. And then you can't have the coal go to market without the train. So then the coal miners went on strike. So it began with the Great Railroad Strike, but it had begun a lot longer before that as well. But that just was the straw that broke the camel's back.
We just saw images of rioting in the streets of Paris. Was this violent rioting?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
We actually, in the play, do, in honor of the miners who were killed on Lackawanna Avenue that day, we name them. Mm-hmm. So those characters are true, and we've tried to do the best job we can with them. But to honor them, we've done that.
And it's always such a hardship for the families left behind.
And that's why it was so important to have a miner's wife in this one. There's a beautiful scene where, after the riots, her husband was gravely wounded, and she sits in a chair and talks about, what will I do? What about the children? Women didn't work outside of the home. Mm-hmm. There were some tough choices to be made. Because the last pay cut that the miners were facing would bring them down to 35 cents a day. Not an hour, a day. And everybody lived in company housing, company stores. The companies owned you. So mm-hmm. it's a dark time in not only Scranton's history, in a lot of cities and towns across PA and the United States. But for us, it's important for us to tell the story this way. Yes, we've taken a little bit of, you know, latitude with some of the other characters, but all in all, we feel that we've done it justice.
There's a character who is an out-of-towner and a journalist.
Phoebe Gibbons. And she's a real person. Phoebe was a journalist. She was here in 1877. I don't know if she was here exactly when the riots were going on, but she was here that year, and she did spend a couple of weeks living with a coal mining family.
Whom was she writing for?
Harper's Weekly. The real Phoebe Gibbons. She did a lot of She did labor, but she did a lot of Lancaster. She was from Lancaster as well, so she did a lot of the Amish essays and things out there, too. So she's actual. She's real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had never heard of her until I read this play.
So when we see the play, we'll be learning historical facts like this, but we'll also be engaged in a good story.
Yeah, what we like to say, it's not a history lesson,
no.
But you will learn history as you're enjoying what's going on the stage.
You have a wonderful space with the old brick page, but some might call it small.
Yes.
When there's 20-some people in the cast, there's a lot of challenges.
Yeah. I have to admit, you work in the space that you are given. We have a traditional black box theater. We seat 60 people. But you learn, and the people who work for us at the old brick, they do amazing jobs. The set is built with a few levels so that we can add a body or two on stage. The party scene, it's a little crowded, but what institution that served alcohol wouldn't be crowded if there's a party going on? Pacing is very important because you've got to have people on and off quickly. And so I'm always yelling, pacing, pacing, pacing. And I don't know. It's like the movie Shakespeare in Love. How does it work? I don't know. It's a mystery. It just does. And it's a wonderful team that we've assembled. And the actors were very excited because half of the cast was in the original Bristol. So we automatically brought them back and then had open auditions for the rest of the cast. And we have, I think it's somewhere between, is it 20, 22 people?
Yeah, 22. I think 22. Mm-hmm.
And it just happens. It comes together and you're happy with it. And everyone loves the project. That always makes it easier on the director. But for me personally, as the director, there's nothing like being able to turn around and say, playwright, what was your intent here? Am I going in the right direction? Or playwright, I don't like the way this sounds. It doesn't roll off the tongue. Can we change a word or two here? Or change this sentence to follow the last paragraph? And they're very open. And 9 times out of 10, together we work it out and it's fine.
And we'd rather have Paige tell us when something is wrong.
Yeah.
And we fix it as best we can. And
it's like being in a constant writer's workshop.
Yeah,
really.
Right.
Like the project's never fully done until it's on that stage and still not done because the actors take their own spins on wording and stuff like that as well.
What about a sound design? Is there music?
We have incorporated period music. The young lady who's playing Phoebe has a beautiful voice. So we added a song just for her. And then, of course, the painted ladies always do a bawdy number to keep everybody, you know, well entertained.
So even though the story centers on a tragic event or tragic events, there is humor.
Yeah, and there are times that an original piece comes through, and we just did one with Jeff Bohm that was very dark and talked about a very serious issue based on a real event that happened in Philadelphia. But at the end of it, you felt drained. This also was a drama dealing with very serious subject matter, but we interject humor because at some point you have to take a minute and enjoy life. You just can't always think of this is so bad, this is so bad. How are we going to get, you know, how are we going to feed the kids this week? You got to have a little levity in there.
And that came naturally to you as writers.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Dark humor is my favorite.
Yeah, we like, I like writing comedy actually more, but she gets more of the fun. I do the history part.
Even.
And you're familiar with a number of the actors who are in this show.
And that really helped us a lot for the second one as well, because then I had the people
the
in my head.
In our
head. I heard the voices in my head the entire, well, shouldn't say I hear voices in my head, but I heard their voices in my head as I was writing them.
So that makes it a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
And we're thrilled that everybody wanted to come back. Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes me feel good.
Will there be a sequel?
Yes, there'll be a trilogy. Mm-hmm. There'll be a third one.
I better get ready.
See what you started?
I know. I have no one to blame but myself.
How can we get to see this one?
We can call the theater at 570-209-7766. And I'm going to let them give the dates because I know I always mess it up.
It is December 7th and 8th, 14th and 15th at 8 p.m., and December 9th and 16th at 2 p.m., their Sunday matinees.
Before we leave, in what ways does this piece give us some sense about our current times?
You know, it was what struck me when I read this the first time. It was in the early stages, but we were just getting ready for an election. And it was still undecided whether it was going to be Bernie or Hillary. And Donald Trump had already been nominated. And as I read this, I kept thinking, you know, this is what some of the candidates were saying. The 1% on the backs of the working class. And as much as things have changed,
they
some things stay the same.
Mm-hmm. And the violence now is what scares me because it's reminding me a lot of 1877.
Yeah, we live in a very scary time right now. There is far more violence. And I mean, you know, I can, not for them because they're much younger than me, but I lived through the 60s as a young adult. And there are times, and I say this to my husband, Bob, we've already lived through this. Why are we doing it again? Haven't we learned from our mistakes? So I'm just hopeful that the next couple of generations coming behind us will have an answer for us.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly there's a role for theater, the arts, to play because they bring our head and heart together and we resonate at a deeper level.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. A very good point is when Broadway started addressing cultural differences, South Pacific, prime example. Then we, you know, went on to plays like Rent that was dealing with the AIDS issue and Angels in America. And not too long ago, we were all thrilled with Hamilton, bringing us back to our roots. And I thought, at its best, this is theater's job.
Yep.
It's to make you think and feel at the same time.
Director Paige Belitsky of the Diva Production Company and playwrights Margot Azzarelli and Marnie Azzarelli, mother and daughter, speaking about City of Unrest, their original play about the Great Railroad Strike and the Scranton Rioting of 1877, to be presented at the Old Brick Theater, 126 West Market Street in Scranton, this weekend and next, Fridays and Saturdays, December 7th and 8th, and 14th and 15th at 8 p.m., and Sunday matinees, the 9th and 16th at 2. For more information, you may visit Diva Theater on Facebook, D-I-V-A, and theater is T-H-E-A-T-E-R, Diva Theater on Facebook, or call the theater at area code 570-209-7766, 209-7766. That's an original play by Margot Azzarelli and Marnie Azzarelli, directed by Paige Belitsky at the Old Brick Theater in Scranton, presented by Diva Production Company. And the shows will be this weekend and next, December 7th and 8th, Friday and Saturday, and again the next Friday and Saturday, the 14th and 15th, at 8 o'clock each night, and then Sunday matinees the 9th and the 16th at 2. For more information, you may visit Diva Theater on Facebook.